you worked in a prison library. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I worked as a clerk in the library. I basically put everybody on payroll in that library. I had all the law clerks working on Tito's case doing research.
And how did you put them on payroll? What do you mean?
Well, you pay them with coffee, you know?
I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Cocaine Air, the TJ Dominguez story. Episode 9, The Prison Librarian. What's about to happen in this episode will at the very least surprise you, and at the very most, it'll blow your mind. I mean, it blew mine. So buckle up. It's 5 a.m. now in Los Angeles, and I'm getting in my car, and I'm driving to Las Vegas. It's a 3-hour and 45-minute drive at this time of the morning. I'm meeting up with a prison librarian, well, a retired prison librarian, an incredible woman who forms an unusually close bond with TJ when he's serving time behind bars in Florida. We meet at the Bungalow Coffee Company off East Charleston Boulevard, just a stone's throw from the famous Las Vegas Strip.
Good coffee.
It's 9 a.m. on a Monday, so the place is pretty crowded and noisy. But I got my podcasting headphones on, and the audio sounds good, so I start the interview. First, let me have you introduce yourself.
My name is Liana Lovell. I used to be employed at the correctional facility in Putnam County, Florida.
And that's where the prison was that TJ was serving his time.
Yes.
How would you describe that prison? What does a prison like that look like, feel like?
Well, this was a minimum to medium security prison, so everybody was getting out at some point.
Oh, okay. So this is a prison where people go who are getting out soon.
Well, they might still have 15 years, but they're still getting out at some point. So they have
life in prison.
Right.
Ah, so does everyone have a cell they're confined to?
There are cells, and then there are dorms that they have. The prisons in Florida are not air conditioned.
Oh, that's hell.
Yes.
That is hell.
And very little fan air movement.
So it's a sweat box.
It is.
Wow.
So they loved the library because it was air conditioned. The clerks that worked for me, Tito, made such a huge influence on me.
And what was he doing in the library primarily? What did he tell you he was up to? Like, why did he go to the library?
He worked in the library.
Oh, that's his job.
Yes. So 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, 5 days a week.
Wow.
Yeah. So he had a desk right out in front of my office that watched the door, the front door, and we had movements, which is when certain times people could come to the library. So they weren't just walking in and out all day long. And he would make sure everybody signed into the library. And if they had appointments for the law library, he sent them over there. He basically kept an eye out on everybody, would let me know if something might be happening. But I have to tell you, the library was always the biggest place for contraband.
Really? What kind of contraband are we talking?
Anything that they could put into books. They could hollow out books. And
yeah.
Inmates get drugs. The correctional officers bring them in. One of my law clerks told me what he was getting and how much he was getting,
what was he getting
every week. Cocaine and marijuana.
In prison?
In prison.
And were they cutting books open to hide it in the books?
I do not know how, but it was the correctional officers. And there are a lot of correctional officers or people that have worked in that system that have a lot more material things than their jobs allowed them.
So in between the lines, what you're saying is the only way those inmates are getting drugs is
correctional
if
officers.
The correctional officers are, yes, supplying it. Somebody on the outside is paying them.
Yes.
Connected to the inmate.
Yes.
Wow.
I had, because I'm a smoker, and my very first day, I set my pack of cigarettes on my desk. Uh-huh. And the officer that was with me the first couple of days, he says, oh, you need to put those in your, he says, those go for $100 a pack.
So you could sell it to an inmate for $100. And how would the inmate get you that money from someone from the outside?
There is some kind of chain of, I wasn't privy to that.
But when you said some of the correctional officers seem to have a lifestyle beyond what a prison.
Yes.
What did that look like? What did you notice?
The officer that was with me the first couple of days showed me his account online, and his was well over $100,000.
Wow.
And he was maybe 25.
So where did all that money come from? Like, he's getting paid to give stuff to inmates.
Yes.
Wow.
I would have to assume.
Right.
Why would he show me that and then tell me that cigarettes are $100, you know, a pack? Or, and I never gave the inmates anything, like the contraband.
Right.
Because they don't need to get in trouble.
Yeah.
They're already, you know, you don't need to add to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You blew my mind. Interesting. It's such a blatant hypocrisy, though. Like, here you have these people convicted of a crime, and yet these prison guards who are supposed to be in charge are committing crimes with the, you know, charging the inmates to provide them with drugs or whatever.
So then that inmate cuts down what he gets in and sells it to the other inmates.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money to be made on all sides in prison.
Wow, I hadn't thought of that until you just brought that up. Interesting.
This revelation about all the drug dealing, about all the prison guards making fortunes catering to this illicit demand, shocks me. So I asked TJ about it.
There's a lot of activity in a state prison and also in a federal prison. It's a small world after all. So everything that goes on out here goes on in there. So you have probably more drugs per capita than you have in the outside world.
And that's what blew my mind. I didn't know, and it kind of upsets me on your behalf, because it's just you're in there for drugs, and yet the prison guards are selling drugs, and it's an open secret. It's not a secret at all.
Well, you know, I'm in a situation, I'm living in a bubble and in a glass house, so I don't want to take a lot of shots at the government. I don't fear the generals and the Pablo Escobars. I fear more the government.
But did you witness people buying cocaine in prison?
Come on, of course I did. People offered me that, T, why don't you jump in? And I want no part of it. I didn't go in there to get another charge.
What I'm struggling to understand is all these inmates are locked up, right? Their movement is restricted. So after the prison guard gets cocaine to one inmate, how the hell are they dealing it to each other?
You have these dorms, dorm A, dorm B, dorm C. Now, they try to isolate everybody. There's only two places that everybody meets. The grounds, and then
exercise outside.
Yeah, yeah. And the library. Now, how do you get the drug, or how do you get the cigarettes, or how do you get whatever you're going to get from A to B? Well, there's different ways of moving that. You can move it with the trash people that go around pushing trash. So, you know, these are in compound smugglers, let's call them. You know, in the trash bag that they're picking up from dorm A, and then they're going to go to dorm B to pick up more trash. In there somewhere, there'll be something that's being transported and being moved. Now, these people, they're mules, and they're going to get X amount of dollars for that. Now, the library, as I was saying before, when you're talking about all the illegal drugs and so forth and so on, it's a place where A, B, C, and D, everybody goes at one time. So if I'm going to pass something to Jonathan, Jonathan, go to the library tomorrow at 11. I'll be there at 11 o'clock tomorrow. And I'm going to hand off this. I'm going to hand off that. It's a way of passing stuff around.
And then Liana told me they would carve it into books, hollow out books.
Yeah.
And
or I might say to you, Jonathan, I can't get there at 11. So listen, I'm going to leave it in the Britannica Encyclopedia F. You know, in the middle of the book, there'll be, you know, certain drugs or whatever, cigarettes.
And what are you thinking as you're learning all of this on the inside?
It's a joke to me.
Right?
It's a joke.
It's fucking crazy.
It's not my world. I don't want any part of it. I got more important things. You know what they are? my freedom.
Yeah.
I didn't come here to get in trouble.
Life in prison for TJ is fraught with constant threats everywhere he turns. He can never let his guard down. And all the lessons he's learned studying karate and navigating the violent world of cocaine smuggling, of corrupt government officials, and of all those murderous Colombians uniquely prepares TJ for life on the inside. When you're in prison and another inmate walks up to you, you have to be ready to act because things can go sideways quickly.
This gentleman that was a black guy was really, really big, you know, and he corners me in a corner and he says, listen, man, you're gonna have to start paying protection. They shake people down in these places.
Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code Walton. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does. What? Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code Walton. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now. So this big guy who's twice your size comes over and says, you need to start paying for protection?
Yeah.
Against who? Against him? Like, that's the implication, right?
Well, he didn't say against, you know, me and my boys, but he just said one word. You have to start paying protection. If you don't want something bad to happen, people get stabbed in there all the time. Okay, this is the way it is in there. It's an ugly world. You can't be weak. And you can't show weakness. So I looked at the guy, I swear to you on a Bible, I said to the guy, listen, man, I didn't come here to be your friend. Pay protection. Let me explain something to you. You won't mess around with other people. I'm not the kind of guy that you're used to talking to. I don't scare. And I don't need anybody to protect me. Let me explain something else to you. You got a family out there? You got kids, you got a mommy out there, I will hurt them from in here. And then the day you get out, I'll have people in the parking lot waiting for you to hurt you some more. You don't want to F with me. I'm not here to be your buddy.
As TJ is telling me this story, his face changes completely. Something comes over him. He's suddenly not the same person. His eyes glaze. His voice sounds different. For the first time since I've known TJ Dominguez, I am frightened. So I gotta say, sitting here talking to you, even though I know you're not gonna hurt me, when you clicked into that mode, when you're talking to that guy,
I transformed myself.
You fucking did. Like, I was scared. I'm like, oh my God, how do I get out of here? You do transform. Oh, like, what's the trick to that? You just bring it all out.
I think it goes back to martial arts. Keying up energy.
Energy. That's what it was. That's what you brought up a second ago that scared me. I start thinking, wait a minute, is TJ effing crazy?
You can feel it. No, no. Listen, when I used to go into that mode, everything would go slow down, slow motion. This is crazy. People won't believe it, and I don't even want to say it because people can't relate to this kind of stuff. Everything turns into black and white. I see silhouettes. And I see things that happen before they happen. Everything starts moving really slow. And I transform, I become something else. And it drains me after an incident.
Yeah.
I just fold. I have to sit down because it just takes everything out of me.
But it worked.
It works every time. And listen, the bigger they are, you've heard that expression, the harder they fall.
Yeah.
There's a lot of truth to that. You know why? It's the little guy that's gonna hurt you.
Yeah.
He's unpredictable. Yeah. And my dad told me that a long, long time ago. Worry about the little guy that's always smiling. The big bad wolf over there, you know how to handle him. When I was a karate instructor, the hardest thing that I used to have to teach was self-control. I could teach anybody how to kick and how to punch. It might take 6 months or 6 years, but you're gonna learn. But what I can't teach you is to control that anger. Don't get mad. Don't take a swing at somebody and out of your anger and your emotion, you're closing your eyes and the rage takes over. It ain't about rage, man. It's about survival. It's about actually making it happen. The only way you're going to do that is staying in full control of the situation. Maybe that's one reason why I never did drugs, because I like to be in control of what I do. And I used to be able to break 8 2-inch concrete slabs with my knuckles. You see how my knuckles?
Yeah, they're all deformed. Yeah, they kind of are. It looks like a horror movie.
Yeah. When you're breaking 8 splits, they call them 2-inch, 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 2-inch. If you break with power, they break from the top down. You hit it here, and then they go boom, 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 and they break. When you break with finesse, shockwave, and technique, takes years to master this. They don't break from the top down. They break from the bottom up. The shockwave travels through the concrete. When it hits the end, it can't go any further, and it reverses, and it goes boom, boom, boom. And you might break the 3 on the bottom and not the 1 on the top.
Oh, and that's pretty, the evidence that it went all the way through.
That's pretty fascinating. Yeah. Pretty fascinating. Physics. Takes years to match. I used to punch a candle and try to suck the flame off by pulling it back.
TJ spent stretches of time in a lot of different prisons and jails based on all of his indictments.
When I saw that big indictment, it was like 57 counts, looked like Gone with the Wind book.
How many states were you indicted in?
I was indicted in Detroit, New York, Florida, Central District, Southern District. They were going to indict me in Georgia. I got a pass on that. And then in the Bahamas.
And how many different prisons, jails did you do time in? It sounds like a lot.
A lot, including 2 countries. Which they flew me out of the United States. They indicted me in the Bahamas.
And you were in jail in the Bahamas.
Yeah. The jail in the Bahamas is like, it's really ugly. You sleep on the concrete and you poop in a bucket that they change.
In a bucket.
In a bucket where they put a piece of plywood on top.
Like to cover it.
Yeah.
That's hell.
Yeah, it's hell.
At one point, TJ spending time in a Michigan jail.
It was only 7 tons of cocaine, I think, I got indicted for in Detroit. But it was federal. Had I been indicted state, I would have been doing life. State would give you life for 1 kilo. So I finally arrived at the jail in Detroit. My wife is pregnant, right? Gonna have a boy. She's due any moment. There's a guy that's on the phone. This guy's on the phone for an hour. You can't be on the phone for an hour. We got a line here. And there's like 10, 15 people waiting on the phone line. I'm waiting. I got a line behind me, and this guy's abusing the phone privileges. So I say to the guy, hey man, can you give us a break? They're getting ready to do lockdown. So in the next hour, the phones are gonna be disconnected. We're gonna have to be in the room, and we're not gonna be able to call. And the guy looks at me like cross-eyed, and he says,
can't you see I'm on the phone?
And I said, yeah, that's why I'm asking you to please, be fair, let us get a shot at the phone. He answers me really nasty.
Hey man, I'm on the phone.
So I turn around, I walk away, and I get back online. So another 10 or 15 minutes of this, and I'm looking at the time, and I know they're gonna lock down. I'm not gonna be able to call my wife. I've been on the road for a month or two. You lose track of time. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if my wife had a baby, if she didn't have a baby. I don't know none of this. Right? And I'm starting to get a little annoyed with this abuse. So I walk up to the guy and I say to the guy, hey, listen, man, I tried being really nice with you and understanding. And I get this thing that you're on the phone. I said, but I need to get on the phone, man. You need to hang up the phone. He looks at me, quote, he says, you know why I'm in here? I said, no, I really don't care why you're in here.
He's like, I killed seven people. That's why I'm in here.
You know what I did? I swear to you on everything that's sacred to me. Took my hand, I hung up the phone, grabbed the receiver off, snatched it off his hand. I said, you're gonna have to kill the 8th motherfucker.
Oh my God.
That's me.
And then what did he do?
Looked at me, he says, this ain't over. I said, no, it's over right now. I'm on the phone.
The lesson is, if you're ever in a situation where your life's in jeopardy, you're threatened by an aggressor, do not do what they think you're going to do. Don't cower. Don't beg.
Yeah.
Do the opposite. Shake it up. take him off kilter. When he told you I kill seven people, he was expecting you, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, forgive me, I'm sorry.
I clicked the phone off, snatched the phone receiver. I was going to hit him with a receiver over the head with the same receiver. Oh, absolutely.
But the bully's back
down. I've been sitting there online for like 30 minutes thinking about what I'm going to do. This is it. I'm done. Yeah. I'm not waiting another second. I'm going to take this phone. I'm going to get on the phone. I want to talk to my wife. And there ain't nobody on this earth that's going to stop me.
Years later, TJ's spending time in that Putnam County, Florida State Prison.
The state picks me up. They transfer me over to a state facility, which is unbelievably horrible. The mosquitoes are so big out there, you got to put license plates on them. bite you twice, you're going to get lightheaded. And there's no joke.
That's where you met Leanna, right?
Yeah.
Right, because there's no air conditioning.
It's a warehouse with bars with bolted beds on the ground out of steel. He's sleeping on steel with his mattress, which is, I don't even know how to describe it. You know, it's not even really a mattress. It's just, you know, there's a zillion stains on it. It's all kinds of weird stuff on it. Biologically, you could study all kinds of weird stuff on that.
From previous inmates.
Yeah, that's probably been there like 100 years, wow. You know?
And there's no AC.
AC, what is that?
So you're just in there sweating on this dirty mattress.
With 200 people.
With 200 other sweaty, dirty mattress people.
That's right.
Yeah. And the smell.
The smell is disgusting. I don't even want to remember all that. It's just nothing that's really, it's just not fun.
TJ is brand new there when a much sought-after job at the prison library becomes available. Hundreds and hundreds of other inmates are vying for that job, and seniority plays a huge factor in who they choose. And since TJ is a new arrival, it would seem like he doesn't stand a chance. But in TJ's mind, that's not the case at all.
There was no doubt in my mind I was getting a job. No doubt in my mind. This job was locked up. It was waiting for me before I got there.
So how did you get the job? These people are competing for the job.
Well, all these people are competing for the job. I go to the library in this prison. It's like a small world. You got everybody from all kinds of walks of life and different languages. So I went in there and I said, I understand that you're going to be interviewing for somebody to work here in the library. And she goes, yeah, that's right. I said, well, I'd like to be considered for the job. And she goes, oh, you know, and she's like, oh, what do you bring to the table type
like,
thing?
Like, who the hell are you?
Yeah, I came out of nowhere, right, parachuted in, right? I've only been there 4 days, you know, in the prison. And so I said, well, I think I could be a help in the library. And she goes, oh, how could you be a help? I said, well, I speak 4 or 5 languages. Let's start with that.
What languages do you speak?
I speak Creole, like a Haitian. I speak French. I speak English, you know, and I speak Spanish.
Well, give us some Creole from Haiti. Creole,
sac passemo show. My boule.
What does that mean?
Yeah, that means what's going on, guy? I'm happening, or I'm, you know, it's just an expression that they have
in Haiti.
You know, in Haiti, I win the lady over.
And you knew you would.
I knew I would. I was sure I was getting the job.
You felt it.
I knew it. I didn't feel it. I knew I was getting the job. Maybe she didn't know, but I knew I was getting that job with the fact that I spoke a few languages and the fact that her daughter was married to a Haitian didn't hurt either.
Because you spoke Creole.
Because I spoke Creole. Next thing I know, I got the job.
So again, this is another crossroads in your life. That job seemed impossible. Everyone's vying for it. You just
because
got
my
there.
Languages
You're a nobody.
Yeah, yeah,
how,
yeah.
What made you think, I'm going to take my shot? You were certain you were going to succeed.
Yeah.
How? How did you know that?
Yeah, and this kind of goes to the crystal ball thing, or this kind of goes with
the... You have this psychicness about you, right? You're like, I know if I can make my case to this lady, I'm in. TJ's job at the prison library is to sit outside the librarian's office and make sure all the inmates coming in have appointments and are behaving themselves while they're there. And on occasion, he also has control of the copy machine, which makes him a beacon.
When I was controlling the copy machine, I was continuously offered money for copies for many, many different things. Porn.
They want to copy porn.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Those pages of porn go for X amount of dollars. You know, so, hey, man, can you make me some copies? I need 20 copies of this. No.
I guess, yeah, everyone's off in prison.
Yeah.
And that's all they have. There's no internet.
That's all you have.
There's no videos.
There's nothing.
It's there's no photocopies of porn. Yeah. And did you make...
No. I would not do anything that's illegal.
Because you didn't want to jeopardize your situation.
No, I just don't do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's the beautiful irony of this whole situation.
I just don't do that
you
kind of stuff.
You are a by-the-book kind of guy.
Yeah, I am. Okay, fine. All the fact that I brought in a lot of cocaine. Okay, I did do that. Guilty of that. I have no problem with that. You know, the 80s, it wasn't say no to drugs. The 80s were, yes, we're partying. Yeah. And remember another thing. The cocaine back in those days was in the hands of very influential people. Lawyers, doctors, actors, movie. I can name a few actors.
And the Oscar goes to?
That friends of mine supplied.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I can go there. You know, yeah, absolutely. But
Are they still alive?
Yeah, they're still alive.
But they're big-time actors that we would know. But you can't name them.
No, I can't. Right, it wouldn't be fair.
What's their big movie?
Can't go down that road. Let's narrow it down. Where were they on the cast? No.
You continue to impress. You're such an honorable guy. You're not gonna out anybody.
That.
You're gonna, even
no,
though
it's
you
just
have
not
no,
right.
You serve time. You got convicted. You're still not gonna out any of them.
No, it's not right. And they weren't my clients either, because I never sold a kilo.
But they were people you sold wholesale to people who sold to them.
Right.
What was the prison library like, and why did you get involved?
Well, the reason why I got involved in that, because I got what I thought was a pretty unfair sentence. I got sentenced by the state and I got sentenced by the feds.
Right.
Right. So I got two different sentences. They gave me 8 years on the state. They gave me 3 years on the feds. I would have bombed it out on the feds, but I didn't bond out because the state held me.
It gets so complicated, right? Yeah. I don't know how you keep track of it all, but to you, you sound like a lawyer now.
No, I know more than a lot of lawyers. You know why?
Yeah.
Because it's my ass inside there.
Yeah. So that was your impetus to go to the prison library and learn that's when you learned the law.
Yeah. I learned what things that pertain to me, and that's what I focused on. What I'm trying to accomplish is to see how I could shave some time off my sentence. Because you got law clerks in there. And believe it or not, some of these law clerks are more knowledgeable than lawyers out here.
Yeah.
Some of them are actual lawyers that got caught doing the wrong stuff, and now they're lawyers inside. But some of them studied law to become a law clerk. So I basically put everybody on payroll in that library. I had all the law clerks working on Tito's case, doing research.
And how did you put them on payroll? What do you mean?
Well, you pay them with coffee, you know? I have somebody send money to their account, other third party.
Okay, so these clerks are inmates.
Right.
And
these are not library clerks. These are law clerks.
Right. But they're inmates with a knowledge of the law, or they're lawyers who are also inmates.
Correct.
So they can help. They have the power. Right. So they're all helping you with your case.
Right.
And you're putting money on their account or giving them coffee or whatever.
Right.
And it paid off. It
paid off tremendously.
TJ, along with his prison library crew of clerks, researches tons of case law. And in a motion to a judge, he's able to knock 2 years off that Florida State prison sentence. But still, the cruel irony of it all really annoys me. TJ gets busted for supplying cocaine to users and serves years behind bars for it. And yet, apparently, a lot of these prison guards are supplying cocaine and other drugs to inmates locked up, and they're making a fortune. Life is truly a bizarre paradox. In the next episode, how has the Cocaine Air podcast affected TJ's life? How did the war on drugs, escalated by President Reagan in the 1980s,
37 federal agencies are working together in a vigorous national effort,
actually help TJ sell way more cocaine? And do you remember the British Airways Concorde?
The first supersonic passenger airliner to fly you at more than twice the speed of sound.
It could fly from New York to London at supersonic speeds and get you there in 3.5 hours. Well, back in the day, when TJ was flying to London on the Concorde, seats were $12,000 each. This weird guy sits down beside him. and TJ is stunned to learn who he is. And on another flight, TJ's sitting in first class, and another strange man sits down beside him. He's super thin, wearing weird clothes and makeup, and has a strange voice. TJ has no idea who he is, but about an hour in, a flight attendant tells TJ that his seatmate is actually one of the biggest pop stars of all time. It's not Michael Jackson. Can you guess who it is? I'll tell you in episode 10. How crazy is it that TJ Dominguez only becomes a drug smuggler because he got scammed by not one, but two duplicitous con artists in his life? It would be wise to figure out who the con artist is in your life before they scam you. So pick up a copy of my book, Anatomy of a Con Artist, The 14 Red Flags to Spot Scammers, Grifters, and Thieves. Con artists are everywhere. There's probably one in your social circle right now, but you won't know who until they trick you out of money. The woman who scammed me out of nearly $100,000 was my best friend for 4 years.
You've been scamming us out of money this whole time.
You have.
And during that entire time, she was scamming everyone around me too. But no one had a clue until she got their money. Protect yourself, or protect your elderly parents, or your young naive kids, or your friends and neighbors. Learn how to identify the con artist in your life or in the lives of your loved ones before they trick any money from them. I will show you what the 14 red flags are of every con artist working today, so you can spot these soulless demons a mile away. My book is available everywhere books are sold, in hardcover and on Kindle and Audible as well. Just Google Anatomy of a Con Artist. To see some incredible photographs documenting TJ's life, go to cocaineair.com. And if you're enjoying Cocaine Air, please hit that share button and text it to your friends and family right now. And if you feel comfortable, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews really help other listeners find us. Cocaine Air was created, written, and executive produced by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producers, Evan Goldstein, and the inimitable TJ Dominguez. Audio engineering by me, Jonathan Walton. Sound design and editing for this episode was done by Mike Smith. And the Cocaine Air cover art is by Bobby Animation. We've got a lot of fascinating untold stories like Cocaine Air coming down the pike at Jonathan Walton Media, so subscribe and keep an ear out.